Hi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirayam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay. Okay, Srila Narad Muni continued, page 21. Brahmacharis or grihasthas who have taken the vow of celibacy as described above should not indulge in the following: applying powder or ointment to the eyes, massaging the head with oil. That doesn't mean you don't put oil on the head. You just don't do a whole head massage out of it with oil, right? Okay, massaging the body with the hands, seeing a woman or a painting, a woman's picture, eating meat, drinking wine, decorating the body with flower garlands, smearing scented ointment on the body, or decorating the body with ornaments. So, in other words, people will do this as decoration, trying to make themselves look better, more attractive, and all this. This doesn't mean mahapashat, where you're wearing because of the purification. That because when you're decorating means you're going to make it all match. Here it's just the garland as it is. You wear it because it's mahapashat. That's one thing. But here the other is that you're making it everything matches. It goes, you know, the flower, the color of the flowers goes with the outfit. The whole, yeah, that kind of thing. That makes sense. yes. It means men is specifically. You know, women would apply it how much it applies. In other words, how much is necessary they apply and how much is not they don't. So your question is that means then the women can eat meat and stuff? Is that what you mean?
Oh, no.
I didn't catch that one. Okay, yeah.
No, but massaging the body with the hands. I mean, you should do it without hands.
Yes. Use your elbows, you know, shiatsu kind of, you know, yeah. See, so one thing is it a matter of, if it's a matter of like pleasure and stuff like that, then that's where the problem comes. If it's a medicinal thing or things like that, then that's another. So there are different kinds of massage. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Okay. These they should give up. According to the rules and regulations mentioned above, one who is twice born, namely a Brahmin, Kshatriya, or Vaishya, should reside in the Gurukul under the care of the spiritual master. There he should study and learn all the Vedic literatures along with their supplements and the Upanishads, according to his ability and power to study. If possible, the student or disciple should reward the spiritual master with the remuneration the spiritual master requests, and then, following the master's orders, the disciple should leave and accept one of the other ashrams, namely the grihastha ashram, vanaprastha ashram, or sannyas ashram, as he desires. So then one's going to study the Vedic literatures, and then the supplements, you know, like the Upanishads. Because if you just study the Vedas, then you won't get necessarily a full understanding. The Upanishads give the philosophical meaning. So one should know the philosophy. Right, one studied the Vedas, so therefore one knows the Veda, one knows the skills of the Veda, but one should also know what the Vedas actually meant for. Right, then graduating like that, you know, or means when he finishes his study, like that, then, because the point is those who graduate, they get married. Those who don't graduate, but they finish the study, then they may continue in the ashram there, or they may go on to one of the other ashrams. Does that make sense? Yeah, means those who are naistika, or that they don't graduate. You graduate to become a grihastha. Like that. So they'll just they finish their study, then they'll just go on to practicing the lifestyle of these other stuff. Yeah.
The training of the shivas is that that's not in the
generally they don't appreciate the Gurukul because of, you know, the time away from the family, the time schedule, the restrictions and everything. Like I remember going to one art school in Vrindavan. I was discussing with the, you know, who was organizing the school. And basically they start in the evening. Like when everybody else would go to bed, that's when they start. And the reason that they start then is that there's no restriction on time. See, if you have in the day, then you have to restrict yourself because, you know, between lunch and the evening or between breakfast and lunch or, you know, there's a restriction on time. But if at night, you don't really have a restriction. Why not a restriction? Because it would be a matter of, you know, they go to practice, everything's just really ordinary, then they finish the practice in that early. They go into the practice and they feel real inspired and it's all happening and they're all excited, then they may go all night. Does that make sense? So the Gurukul system doesn't apply itself well to the taste, the standard Shudra kind of taste on you do things when you like doing them. Well, the Gurukul system is you do things when you're supposed to. Because the whole point is it's all about that. You do an occupation, you have to do your work when it's supposed to be done. Not that I don't feel like going to work today or something like that. Also in relationships, you have to deal with the mood that the person's in now, how they're feeling. Right? So in other words, if it's about your feelings, then you're generally not going to be in tune to others' feelings. Right? Like I remember also I was talking with someone else. He was a son of one of these really big musicians. So he was quite good himself. And he had one of his senior students there. And I, you know, came without an appointment, just unannounced. So I came in and I guess he had a few minutes. So we sat and we were talking and I had some questions like that. And so as we're talking, then generally they have the students warm up a bit or practice a bit. One, it's good for the student because they kind of do something that they're familiar with. Two, they get warmed up so that their fingers are kind of in place and they kind of know what they're doing. But the other thing is that what generally the students don't know is the teacher listens and they can tell how much they've advanced by seeing how what they do before the lesson starts. So then they know at the lesson what to focus on, right? But they don't need much time. So then this student was really going for it. You know, they were both, I would say, probably in their, you know, like mid-20s or something like that. So very young, enthusiastic and like that, and very proud of themselves, you know, accomplished in that, because I guess they were both from, you know, very good backgrounds in the way of music. So the one is going at it, some far out raga, and he's really, really going through the practice really, really fast, really, really, you know, very technical, but so fast, and get to the point where it's like, it's all happening here, you know, like that. And he was looking over, hey, it's going on like that, you know, you should come over. And then the teacher's there, he's looking, and he keeps looking back, he can't pay attention because it's all happening and like that. So that's the point with Shudras. It's about when it happens, and you have to take it. Because that's what they look for. They can't make it happen. Because making it happen takes regulation. You understand? Rag comes from regulation. Right? Whimsicality, that just happens. You understand? So the idea is whimsicality will create this spontaneity, but it doesn't. It never does. But regulation, that creates spontaneity because you become so good at it, after a while it just happens. You know, it's like a playing mridanga. You sit there and go, te, re, ke, ta, te, re. You know, most people do it for a few minutes and okay, now what's the next one? No, but the actual old school is no. You do that for, you know, forever basically. You know, it's a 2-hour class and you do that for 2 hours. So you're sitting there, and if you can get through that, after about 45 minutes, it just naturally starts to speed up. You didn't do anything. It just happens. But it's based on, that's the whole point, is that on Vaidhi comes Rag. So that's why in the Vedic system, you start with the science, then the art will come. But since you're trying to get to the art, the artist, then what are they going to go for? The art, right? They're going to try to avoid the science unless it's necessary. If their art is so technical, they have to learn the art. Therefore, those artists that have learned the science, they're better than the artists who didn't. Does that make sense? Yeah, because you have to put in the time, you have to put in the austerity. So, therefore, technically as devotees, then someone who's of a Shudra nature could go to Gurukul. Right? Because as a devotee, then they can function as a Brahmin. Since Brahmacharya is ashram, then it's ashram anyway, they can function. Right? But getting out of the Gurukul, it's not necessarily that they would use any of those Brahminical skills necessarily in their life. Right? They may not do puja, they may not do these other things. Does that make sense? So that may be dropped, but the other thing is there. But that's because they're devotees. So that would depend upon how much they're devotees, that's how much they could do. Right? And so the less devotional, then the less they'll be able to handle it. Well, dwijas, basically, if they're of standard, they can handle it. If they're below standard, then they'll have trouble, and then with time, by practice and purification, then they can handle it. You understand? Because when we're dealing with varnashram, we are dealing with the conditioning. Say what you like about the soul and devotee, this, that, blah. We are dealing with the conditioning. The conditioning is what goes to school. Right? It's not that the pure spirit soul goes off to school and leaves the body home to play video games. Right? You know. No, it means the body goes off to school and the soul, God only knows where it is. Most teachers are still looking for, you know, are any of these bodies sitting in these desks alive? You know, is there, you know, some symptom of life there? Yeah. So talk to most teachers, that's their experience. Right? Only when the bell rings and suddenly then they come back to life. You know, the zombies amazingly get cured of their zombiness, and then for 10 minutes they're that, and then somehow or another the disease creeps back in and they go back to their desk. Yeah. Yeah? Okay? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Yes?
I can understand that Sina and Brahmachari, who skips Kriyasta, go through sannyas, but you mentioned some of them also go to
vanaprastha.
Yes. Probably stay there for their whole life.
Generally, vanaprastha, as we mentioned, it can be a terminal ashram. You can't end there. It doesn't have to go beyond that. So it is a recommend, because it's a renounced ashram. So as a brahmachari, vanaprastha, or sannyas, you can end your life in that way. Like that. You don't have to go on. But so we're used to brahmacharya and vanaprastha, because vanaprastha, generally, he performs austerities, lives a simple life, generally lives, you know, in a position that's in a fixed place. They don't necessarily travel as much and stuff like that. That's why they're known as vanachari or like this, because they stay. So they would be in a kind of out-of-the-way place that's not too out-of-the-way, because they would have a tendency to interact with the community, more on community level to explain to them and help them or discuss spiritually, so that they're kind of like a bridge between, you know, the day-to-day life of the community and the transcendental position of what one's trying to get to. Does that make sense? So someone could do it, but it's not necessarily that many would necessarily choose it. It's not that we don't have plenty of vanaprasthas in our society. It's that we don't know what they are, so we don't identify them. Like that, so they don't get the credit they deserve, because they are a senior ashram. Like that. You know, it's just like Siksha Gurus. They don't get any recognition, so vanaprasthas don't get any recognition either. Like that. You know, it's like that. Okay, Srila Prabhupada comments. To study the Vedas and understand them, of course, requires some special intelligence. But the members of the three higher sections of society, namely the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, must learn the Vedic literatures according to their capability and power to understand. In other words, studying the Vedic literatures is compulsory for everyone but the Shudras and Antyajas. Like that. Like from now on. See, before it just mentioned Sudras, but now we start. Notice with this chapter here, now we've introduced the Antyajas. So, you know, we get a mention here, honorable mention here, yes. Okay. The Vedic literature gives the knowledge that can lead one to understand the absolute truth, Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. Gurukula, or the reformatory educational institution, should be used only to understand Vedic knowledge. At the present time, there are many educational institutions for training and technology, but such knowledge has nothing to do with understanding the absolute truth. Technology, therefore, is meant for the Shudras, whereas the Vedas are meant for the Dvijas, right? So, as we mentioned, because of the political inclination that the devotees have towards equality, therefore they don't make the distinction that there are those that freedom is the main point and equality is the other. So the technological school where you're learning an occupational duty so you can get a job to make money, that's for Shudras, right? And so that's what then everybody who has that nature, they go to and they have an equal opportunity there. Right? You understand? Then those are the Dvijas, they, because that's based on freedom, so that means the regulative principles of freedom, they go, but it is still individual that according to their nature, they study and they gain knowledge according to their ability. But it's compulsory they do this. So the focus is on the spiritual, on the metaphysical, on the qualities. They also, and skills go along with it, because otherwise how do you express these? But the focus is totally different. It's not about getting a job. It's about becoming human. Because generally, it's an amazing thing. One will find most people like to hire humans like that. So generally, they have no problem. But if one doesn't have faith in the human platform, then one has the skill, and then based on your skill, then hopefully they'll hire you. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's actually two different educational systems. We're taking this modern and Vedic, you know, one's ancient and, you know, archaic, and the other's the all-encompassing now, but actually it's not. They both have always been going on. In the Vedic time means now it's a technical school, but it's not as practical as would be otherwise. Before it was a guild. You went to the guild and like that. So it means your father wouldn't teach you. You would go to the guild. So it would be somebody, an associate, a friend, a relative, someone like that. And then from that, you would then start from the bottom. Let's say you're doing carpentry. You would spend some time just sweeping the place, cleaning the place up and all that. So by modern standards, they would think, oh, what is he learning? No, but he's learning work ethic. Right? This is what you're supposed to do, get it done. Otherwise, let's say you're supposed to make a chair and you have 2 weeks to make it. If you can't sweep, you can't get the chair ready in 2 weeks. Because if you can't sweep, it's because you don't feel like it, so you can't get the chair ready in 2 weeks because you didn't feel like it. It's the same thing. So they have to go through the same thing, but because it's practical here, I will learn the carpentry, I will therefore be able to make money and maintain the family. Therefore, the inspiration is there. But the same Gurukul training in one level is still there, but only in connection with the skill. But even that nowadays has been dropped, so very few people learn through this guild system. Though those who actually know the arts know it's the best. And so you still have them, but you know they're only accessible to very specialized people, or you know, simple, out on the farm or something, you go and work under somebody. Does this make sense? So therefore, it's a difference between Shudra education and Dvija education. One may say we can't make that distinction, but if you can't tell the difference between, what's a car and what's a piggy bank, then you have a problem. You try to drive your piggy bank or stick your coins through the gap in the window in the car, you have a problem. Like that. So it's a matter of intelligence. It's not a matter of sentiment. Yeah. Narad Muni continued, one should realize that in the fire, in the spiritual master, and in oneself, and in all living entities, in all circumstances and conditions, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, has simultaneously entered and not entered. Right? So this is that the Chaturshloki of the Bhagavatam. Right? He is situated externally and internally as the full control of everything. By practicing in this way, whether one be in the brahmacharya ashram, grihastha ashram, vanaprastha ashram, or sannyasa ashram, one must always realize the all-pervading presence of the Supreme Lord. For in this way it is possible to understand the absolute truth, right? This is what ashram is for. That's his actual purpose. That's why during ashram time we study Bhagavatam in that. We don't study it during varna time. Right? Does that make sense? That's the whole point, is that this is what everybody should know. It says in all circumstances and conditions, one should realize how the Lord is in everything, so everything you're doing, you're able to see. If you understand this in ashram, you can apply it in varna. Right? Because so many devotees will ask, well, how do we remember Krishna at work? There's so many disturbances. That's because you don't see Krishna everywhere. You see Krishna everywhere, then what's the difference between being at home and being at work? Just there's more annoying people at work. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Srila Prabhupada comments. This is the beginning of self-realization. One must first understand how Brahman is present everywhere and how he is acting. This education is called Brahmajigyasa and is the real concern of human life. Without such knowledge, one cannot claim to be a human being. Rather, he remains in the animal kingdom. So this is the real point. You know, like that. This is the whole point. So one is saying, okay, well, what to do? We need leadership. We need management. This is the point. You can see Krishna in everything. You can actually then do something proper. You can lead human society. But if you can't see that, then how will one lead? Simply adding in some Shudra skills, right? Because we have to remember, we take it for granted management means Kshatriya or administrator. No, management just means manager. Everybody manages, right? There's a rickshaw wall outside, right? You go and you get on his rickshaw. The rickshaw works. How is it working? Because he manages it. He has to keep air in the tires. He has to keep the chain greased. He has to make sure it doesn't get too loose. Different things that break, he has to fix it. He does a lot of management to run his rickshaw. So management is totally overrated. Right? Because it's thought that this automatically makes you superior. But it's an art. So therefore, by adding an art to your life, how will that make you more God conscious? Right? But if that art is pursuance of the science as given here, now you have something serious. Because you know the science of God consciousness, now you apply that into your life through the various arts that you use, now it becomes useful. That becomes uplifting. But just to add an art and say the art will create bhakti, that's saying karma creates devotion. That's not our philosophy. It's not anybody's philosophy, but it's not ours. Does that make sense? So here he's making the distinction between what is human education and what is, you know, just generic, kind of. Okay. Does that make sense? Okay, verses 17 to 31, the Vanaprastha Ashram. In the Vanaprastha stage of life, one should practice austerities in order to advance in Krishna consciousness. Srila Narada Muni continued, O King, I shall now describe the qualifications for a Vanaprastha, one who is retired from family life. By rigidly following the rules and regulations for the Vanaprastha, one can easily be elevated to the upper planetary system, known as Maharloka. A person in Vanaprastha life should not eat grains grown by tilling of the fields. Like, so Mahar is above what's Mahar is the lowest, or Mahar is Tapa and Satya, the top. Mahar Jana. Yeah, so Mahar is the lowest. Because you see is that there, that's where the Prajapatis live. So then they're very pious. Like that. They follow the Vedic regulations, they're very austere and all that, but there's still kind of the connection with the Grihastha scene. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, a person in Vanaprastha life should not eat grains grown by tilling of the fields. He should also not eat grains that have grown without tilling of the field, but are not fully ripe. So, in other words, the best is that he eats grains that just grow on their own, just wild grains. We may not see that so much now, but before that would be there when you have, you know, open tracts of land, some grain is there, seeds blow around, and then things just grow on their own. They grow up, the seed ripens, it drops on the ground, that's the next season's worth of stuff. like that. So, in other words, this is a very pious place where you just have grains growing on their own, right? Okay, and if they are growing in the field, you've tilled the field and then grown the grains, then you only eat those that are fully ripe. Don't go and pick them when they're green. Right? Nor should a vanaprastha eat grains cooked in fire. Indeed, he should eat only fruit ripened by the sunshine. Right? So if he wants to, then they can grind it on the stone and eat it, or use their teeth to grind it and that, if you really just don't want to bother with anything else like that. So in other words, the whole idea of vanaprastha is you just don't care. You just can't get involved. There's more important things to do. So you just really don't get involved. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. As a brahmacharya, you eat whatever comes along because you don't have any other alternative. The grihastha eats what he wants to eat because he can arrange it. The vanaprastha just eats whatever comes along because he really couldn't care. Right? See, so it's back to that same principle. But the brahmacharya is happy to be eating all kinds of things. The grihastha, you know, isn't so worried about it. You know, you eat because you need to. Yeah. Does that make sense? So there's a slightly difference in mentality. Okay, so then fruit ripened by the sunshine. So that what's naturally ripens on the tree, that's then the kind of thing. Because he's a vanaprastha, he lives in the forest, so therefore he can go and collect these things. Right? Because if you live in the city, then they will get things, pick things earlier, and then as they sit with time, they ripen. Does that make sense? So then that's the idea, is that you're not arranging it like that. Because why pick the fruit early?
It'll last longer.
Future. That's one thing, yes. The future aspect, another aspect.
You can
pick it up. They can pick it, then it gets you. They have to transport it. You can't transport fully, sun-ripened fruit. You know? So, therefore, the economic consideration comes in, so it adds something. It's just there. Krishna arranged it. The other one, then the whole economic system is arranging, you see? So it has something. It has an element of consciousness. The other thing is it's fully ripe. Also eating it, the health-wise, it has the best thing. It's not that something green that's turned, so there's no question of any health issues either. Right? Yeah. Okay. A vanaprastha should prepare cakes to be offered in sacrifice from fruits and grains grown naturally in the forest. When he obtains some new grains, he should give up his old stock of grains. So it's not that he just keeps accumulating. Grihasthas will do that. But if he has a stock of grains, and then it's like that, he goes out and collects more, then whatever he has left, it has to be given away. Or he has a stock of grains, let's say someone comes and gives him charity, he gives up the old stock. So the idea is they keep it as simple as possible, so they're most dependent upon the Lord. Just as the brahmachari is dependent on the spiritual master, the vanaprastha is dependent on the Lord. There's no specific arrangement himself, right? Other than his performance of his duties. Right? We see them. It's about mentality. We'll always take it as what you're doing. No, it's more the mentality. That's why you could live a vanaprastha life, you know, living in one of the temples in the city. Because it's a mentality. Does that make sense? Yeah. A vanaprastha should prepare a thatched cottage or take shelter of a cave in a mountain only to keep the sacred fire. Right? Because the sacred fire, somehow or another, strangely enough, doesn't do good outside in the rain. Like that. So therefore, then he would do it. But he should personally practice enduring snowfall, wind, fire, rain, and shining of the sun. So he, one of the things he does is just sit outside. So it doesn't matter what it's doing, you go sit outside. He practices, it says. So that means maybe you can go out and sit in the snowfall for 5 minutes, and then you have to go back inside. But if you keep practicing it, after a while, you can sit out, and it doesn't matter. Yeah, polar bears. They're great vanaprastas. Right? Like that.
Old people.
Huh?
Old people in the West. They sit outside in the middle of the world.
Yeah. Well, that's because they can't get up and go inside. Yeah, but that's the whole thing, is that just, you know, you just get used to it. The point is, again, you're not worried, you don't care. Right? Does that make sense? So you see, is that it's going into what you're trying to get to is the principle of indifference, because that's the sannyas position. But you see, is that it's coming from a negative aspect. You're making an endeavor to avoid nice, and in this way, get to the point of indifference. Right? Because as grihasta, you've gone out of your way to make things nice. So vanaprastha is just reversing the process. The vanaprastha should wear matted locks of hair on his head and let his body hair, nails, and mustache grow. He should not cleanse his body of dirt. He should keep. So it doesn't mean that they don't take their bath, but they don't have the whole scrub and get in there and do the whole, you know, what you normally do. They go in, take their bath, get out, and like that, and that's it. They don't worry about it. Does that make sense? So they're following their sadhana, they just don't worry about the dirt. You know. So in other words, brahmacharis are supposed to be clean, so this aspect that many brahmacharis are actually following the vanaprastha aspect of this part, they should actually spend more time trying to be a little more clean. But the vanaprasthas don't. He should keep a water pot, deer skin, and rod. Wear the bark of a tree as covering and use garments colored like fire. Being very thoughtful, a vanaprastha should remain in the forest for 12 years, 8 years, 4 years, 2 years, or at least 1 year. He should behave in such a way that he will not be disturbed or troubled by too much austerity. Right? So he's practicing to become very austere, but he doesn't take it beyond where it troubles him. How much he can tolerate, that much he does. Because if you do that every day, then slowly it gets more and more and more. Right? The beginning of the rainy season, you can handle a little bit, but by the end of the rainy season, you can handle a lot. You know, same in the heat. In the beginning, a little bit, but by the end, you can do a lot, or the winter. Yes?
Does this include women as well?
If they go with the husband, yes. Yeah, though they mainly focus on just doing what duties they would do to keep the ashram working. So whether they go out and do that or not, that's another thing. But if they assist the husband in he's doing that, they get half the benefit anyway. So that's the advantage. Without doing the austerity, they get the benefit. He has to do the austerity to get benefit. They, without the austerity, get the benefit. Oh, that would be yes. Means that, I mean, that if we're talking here, going to the forest, the wife goes with the husband to the forest. She just does her duties as a wife. In support of this, she gets half the benefit of whatever he does. Or, as vanaprastha, like you say, he may go to the forest alone, so then he's without, right? Then she stays at home with the children and everything like that, grandchildren and everything, and just takes care and does things there. But it'll be the same thing. She's not worried about what she eats, what she does. She just worries about, you know, doing the service and the family. Like that, trying, you know, discussing spiritual things, not worrying so much about all these things. She doesn't worry about her dress and that. You know, just keeps it simple and nice and all, and like that. Like that, yeah. But, yeah, she wouldn't have to worry about letting her mustache grow. Like that. But it just means they would keep it simple. That's the whole thing. In other words, you don't get into the whole thing. You're not going in and having your, how do you say, the eyebrows with the thread. You know, you're not doing that stuff. Right? Yes.
This sounds like you're trying to reduce the level of passion and
yes.
Go to the level of, I don't know, it sounds a little bit like more ignorance in one sense, that the matter here, the dirt,
No, but why do you worry about your hair? Because of the cleanliness and this and that, or you worry about it because you look good?
Because of the cleanliness.
That's all. So then you don't worry about also the oiling, how you keep it like that, and things like that. Just like how you say, the ears really need decoration on them to, you know, hear properly.
No, but the question was more like,
No, but catch the mood. See, you're caught on the externals. It's a medium. Let's say the girl's in a good mood. What kind of colors does she wear? What happens if she's not in a good mood? And if she's really bad mood, she doesn't even bother. She doesn't even get out of leave the bedroom. Right? You know. So generally, what is it? Tracksuits are generally gray. You understand? So it's a matter of, it's only how much is necessary for that. So how much is the standard within the family? They just only that much. They don't have a change in this and that. Like I remember one devotee talking about his mother. They're from a really rich aristocratic family. She just wears white. And she has her diamond stud earrings. She doesn't wear any other kind of earrings. She doesn't wear long ones or this. Doesn't matter what the occasion is. She goes to any function, she wears the same thing. It's not that what she's not wearing is not refined and nice quality stuff, but it's only that. You understand? So that's the thing. She's not worried about it. She's not dressing like this. She may, you know... if it's public, you'll be dressed a little more. It's at home, a little less. But the point is it's only because that's the etiquette, not that it's for one's own advantage in the social position. And you know what I'm saying? Because the point is, you wear a sari, you don't wear that one again for a while. Otherwise, people think you don't have any saris. But here, she wears the same thing every day. So what does that mean? She just doesn't. She doesn't care. Does that make sense? So in other words, things that are, girls do things to make themselves look more attractive. So the vanaprastha, they don't do that anymore. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Girl shaves her legs. Vanaprastha doesn't anymore. Who's going to look? Does that make sense? Yeah. This is that's the Western problem. Is indifference means mode of ignorance. But the Vedic indifference means you're not worried about it. Because their indifference means is that the person is mad because of either it looks cool or they couldn't be bothered because they're in ignorance. Here it's they could wash their hair but they don't. See, so someone who's been spending their life taking care nicely now doesn't. You're used to people that look like this from when they're teens. So it's a very different approach. Here, indifference means it doesn't matter. It means on the vanaprastha is that you doesn't matter. Therefore, your arrangement is of the lesser side. The sannyas, basically, they're not arranging, so whatever comes, it may be nice, it may be nice, not nice, they're indifferent, it doesn't matter. Right? Does that make sense? So the vanaprastha, nice stuff, they would avoid. The sannyas, they don't avoid nice stuff, just like they don't avoid not nice stuff. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's not. Okay, he should behave in such a way that he will not be disturbed or troubled by too much austerity, right? So he's trying to be austere, but not so much that it disturbs, because he has to do it every day. So how much you can handle, it's like yoga. Yoga, you only do as much of the asana, for how much of it and how long you can do it. If you do more, it's actually bad for the nerves, right? To do an asana beyond is bad. Right, so the same way as day by day, you know, it improves. So the same way with the austerities, day by day it gets easier. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So, but one's determined to do it, therefore it does improve. When, because of disease or old age, one is unable to perform his prescribed duties for advancement in spiritual consciousness or study of the Vedas, he should practice fasting, not taking any food. He should properly place the fire element in his own self, and in this way give up bodily affinity, by which one thinks the body to be one's self or one's own. He should gradually the material body into the five elements, earth, water, fire, air, and sky, 17 through 24, Srila Prabhupada comments. The body is an effect of a cause, namely the five material elements, earth, water, fire, air, and sky. In other words, one should know perfectly well that the material body is nothing but a combination of the five elements. This knowledge constitutes merging of the material body and the five material elements. Merging into Brahman in perfect knowledge means understanding perfectly that one is not the body but a spirit soul. Right? So either by understanding I'm not the body, that way he's merged, or you can mechanically think all the aspects of earth of the body means all the solid parts, bones, anything, so that's merged back into there. Water, any liquid thing, that's merged back into water. Right? Fire, the digestion, the eyesight, the whatever, that's merged back into fire. Right? All the breathing, the life airs, and back into air, the spaces in the body, back into space. So mechanically one can get that back. So either way, by the philosophy, just knowing, or through the mechanics, either way you get it back. So the point is you're trying to distance yourself from the body before you're engaging the body in these spiritual activities. So therefore you're absorbed that. When you can't do that anymore, now you start to disassociate yourself with the body by this method, through meditation. Does that make sense? Yeah. Narad Muni continued, a sober, self-realized person who has full knowledge should merge the various parts of the body in their original sources. Right. So when Kapila Muni talks in Shankya about where everything comes from, then you know how to do this backwards. We may ask, what's the need of this? Because that's how it came down. That's how it was created. Now, by this process, you reverse it till you get back to, what do you get back to? The Supreme Lord. The idea is you take it back till you get back to Krishna. Yes?
Once we said that this is not the process for our present age, so it's more like for the previous yugas.
No, it works. It works. The point is that, in other words, if we just are, you know, by knowing the philosophy, hearing, chanting, can understand about the body and meditate on servant of Krishna, then that works very nicely. So that's natural here. This is showing the mechanical process, if that's not doing, how to kind of kickstart the whole thing. So if you can be absorbed in the Lord and his pastimes and all that, name, form, qualities, pastimes, then this is already done. Right? But if not, it's a way of getting yourself off the bodily platform. The holes in the body are caused by the sky. The process of breathing is caused by the air. Heat of the body is caused by fire. And semen, blood, and mucus are caused by water. The hard substances like skin, muscle, bone are caused by earth. In this way, all the constituents of the body are caused by various elements, and they should be merged again into those elements. Thereafter, the object of speech, along with the sense of speech, the tongue, should be bestowed upon fire. Right? Therefore, how you say? Fiery tongue, like that, yeah. Or like chili, yeah, whatever. Kind of goes together, right? Those who are into chili generally have fire, yeah. Interesting, no? So, yeah. Especially as you head south, right? Craftsmanship and the two hands should be given to the demigod Indra. The power of movement in the legs should be given to Lord Vishnu. Sensual pleasure along with the genitals should be bestowed upon Prajapati. The rectum with the power of evacuation should be bestowed in its proper place unto Mrityu. The oral instrument along with the sound with sound vibration should be given to the deities presiding over the directions. The instruments of touch along with the sense objects of touch should be given to Vayu. Form with the power of sight should be bestowed upon the sun. So we can see where everything comes from, how they work, what's their function, like that. So you know this, and by that you can, by meditation on understanding, then you separate yourself from the body. Right? Does that make sense? So just here you're doing it all at once. That's all. The tongue along with the demigod Varuna should be bestowed upon water. And the power of smell, along with the two Ashwini Kumara demigods, should be bestowed upon the earth. The mind, along with all material desires, should be merged in the moon demigod. All the subject matters of intelligence, along with the intelligence itself, should be placed in Lord Brahma. false ego, which is under the influence of the material modes of nature, and which induces one to think, I am this body, and everything connected with this body is mine, should be merged along with material activities in Rudra, the predominating deity of false ego. Material consciousness, along with the goal of thought, should be merged in the living individual living being. And the demigods acting under the modes of material nature should be merged along with the perceived living being into the supreme being. Because right? You have the modes of nature, you have those who control, and then that goes back to the Lord himself. Because what's before the presiding demigods of the gunas? Then that's Krishna. Right? So all the demigods, they work under these various modes. They have different departments. Then from there it goes back into the guna avatars, and there it goes back into the Lord himself. The earth should be merged in water, water and the brightness of the sun, this brightness into the air into the sky into the false ego into the total material energy, the total material energy under the unmanifest ingredients, the pradhan feature of the material energy, and at last, the ingredient feature of material manifestation into the supersoul, right? So one is all the functions and all that you put back and all that. And then, having done all that, gotten back to the Lord, now you take it and fold it up so they just don't exist. You understand? So there's two different aspects of the same thing. Right. Footnote 11. This is the process of material creation as we've studied in the second canto, chapters 5 to 6, and the third canto, chapter 6, but in reverse. This process was exercised by Maharaj Yudhishthira, Dhritarashtra, etc., when it was time to leave this world. So it's, we've seen great devotees have used this in the past through meditation just to, disconnect themselves, yes, from the material world. Yes? Okay. When all the material designations have thus merged into the respective material elements, the living beings, who are ultimately completely spiritual, being one in quality with the Supreme Being, should cease from material existence, as flames cease when the wood in which they are burning is consumed. Right? So the fire is considered knowledge. The wood means that our material existence. Right? So when the wood is gone, the fire goes. Right? So that means that this goes up to this point, that you use these qualities, then flames cease. So the whole existence, all our activities cease when there's no more need of the material existence. When the material body is returned to its various material elements, only the spiritual being remains. This spiritual being is Brahman and is equal in quality with Parabrahman. 25 to 31. Okay. So the idea is to get themselves back to the transcendental platform. So he sees brahmacharya life is for studying that spiritual platform and developing the qualities and activities to and skills to act on that platform. Grihastha is then applying that in a wide variety of ranges according to different tastes and needs so that one may come to the transcendental platform. Vanaprastha then is specifically how to detach oneself from the material world by renunciation and then come to the same platform. Right? And then as we'll see sannyas, that will be by acting on the spiritual platform, therefore one is detached from the material situation. Right? So... Chapter 13, the behavior of a perfect person. Pratigya. The sannyasi should always try to see the supreme pervading everything and see everything, including this universe, resting on the supreme. Right? So the vanaprastha is becoming very austere, becoming detached from the material body and its and sense gratification. Then he winds that all up into the supreme Lord. So the sannyasi then means he's functioning in that same, from there, that's where he starts, that it's a matter of seeing the Lord in everything, everywhere. Right? But not engaging the senses, right? It means the grihastha is trying to do that, but they're engaging the senses. The sannyasi is doing that, but it's very restrictive on how much the senses are engaged. So, chapter 13 summarizes questions and answers. The question uttered by Prahlad Maharaj of the Brahmana who is living like a python is not philosophical in nature. and therefore does not come under the study. Likewise, the rhetorical question posed by the Brahmin in verse 31 is not covered here. Adhyaya Prakashika. This 13th chapter describes the regulative principles for sannyasis and also describes the history of an avadhut, right? Because the avadhut is the fourth stage of sannyas. It concludes with a description of perfection for the student in spiritual advancement. Right, so the whole idea of varnashram is for a student in spiritual advancement. You don't like varnashram, you don't like be a student in spiritual advancement. Right? You may be practicing spiritual advancement, but you're not necessarily a student. Right? So you work that out, but
good luck.
Sri Narad Muni has been describing the symptoms of various ashrams and varnas. Now, in this chapter, he specifically describes the regulative principles to be followed by sannyasis. After retiring from family life, one should accept the status of vanaprastha, in which he must formally accept the body as the means of existence, but gradually forget the bodily necessities of life. Right? So, he exists because of the body, but the necessities of the body, that he's kind of, you know, forgetting about those. After vanaprastha life, having left home, one should travel to different places as a sannyasi, without bodily comforts and free from dependence on anyone with respect to bodily necessities. One should travel everywhere wearing almost nothing or actually walking naked. Right? So if he's in the forest, it'll always be in the forest, then he can just walk naked. If he's going to be going through the borders of the forest or the towns, then he may decide whether he wants to wear kopans or not. You know, so we see some do, some don't. So, like that, you know.
Srila Prabhupada made some adjustments.
You can't get into most places in just kopans. They probably wouldn't let you in the door. Like that. I remember I was going up to the Acropolis. You know, had the cheddar under the arm, you know, so your shoulder's sticking out. And as I'm walking there, the guard stops me and says, no, you can't go, you know, with your shoulder covered. Right? Because that generally means people are going with no shirt on or something, you know, and just hanging it on their shoulder like that. So they don't understand it as a formal form of dress. And they probably haven't looked at most of the pictures on the Acropolis and seen a lot of people actually dressed like this at the Acropolis, but whatever. That's another point, you know. So you know, we had to put the cheddar over our shoulder, you know. And then he was quite surprised it was so easy. He thought I would go back and go get something else to wear. Actually had that in the airport also. One airline, they also wouldn't let you go down the plane like that. So yeah. Only one. I've never seen it before, but without association with ordinary human society, one should beg alms and always be satisfied in the self, right? So the vanaprastha may associate with those from the ordinary, they come to him or he's on the, like this. So it's not as strict on that aspect. You know, he also hosts very nicely, whatever he has. Hosting is a big thing for vanaprasthas, right? Because it's a matter of service. Right, grihasthas host as a social kind of thing. Vanaprasthas are hosting as a service. So slightly different mood. So that aspect is then encouraged. Like that. Does that make sense? So Manu discusses those kind of details. Without association with ordinary human society, one should beg alms and always be satisfied in himself. One should be a friend to every living entity and be very peaceful in Krishna consciousness. Right? So he deals with everybody very nicely. He doesn't disturb anybody because things don't go his way. He doesn't get upset. That's the thing that should be practiced. Right? So he sees everybody equal. So he deals properly. He also is very careful. He doesn't step on ants and stuff like that. So you see Jarabharat in this position as a sannyasi, then he was avoiding the ants. But since they engaged him in worldly affairs, the two don't match very well, and so therefore he would stop to let the ants pass by while the other palanquin carriers would keep walking. So it would make for a very awkward kind of system. And then they're going off, and then he'd start walking again, and, you know, like this. It's weird. Like that. You can see why the king got upset. Right? So that's the thing. So the Sri, the friend to all living entity, because they all belong to Krishna. He sees everything in connection to Krishna, therefore they have this.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitāya Gaura Devi.